This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, a Fast Government series. In 2012, the IBM Center for the Business of Government published Governing to Win, Enhancing National Competitiveness Through New Policy and Operating Approaches, in which Chuck Pro, its editor, introduced the concept of fast government as a key to increasing the mission value of government organizations. What is fast government? How can we develop strategies and tools to deliver fast government? And how can government move into the 21st century to become faster, cheaper, and better? This special edition of the Business of Government Hour will explore these questions and more with Chuck Pro, editor of the IBM Center report, Fast Government, Accelerating Service Quality while Reducing Cost and Time. Fast Government was born from conversations with hundreds of government leaders following the publication of Governing to Win in 2012. The thread that ran through all of these conversations was the enormous value that the element of time represented. Speed, agility, real-time, rapid response. What all of these have in common is the relationship of time to mission effectiveness and value. Governing to Win set out to explore how our national competitiveness is directly related to how we improve the missions that are provided by government, while also reducing the overall cost of government. Chuck Pro elaborates.
Governing to Win was really based around some work that we did in 2009 associated with taking costs out of government. You can recall at the time that was a very important topic like it is today. And the result of that was a piece of work called A Trillion Reasons, which identified $1 trillion of savings over about a 7 to 8 year period of time in the federal government. And after working with our OMB colleagues, our clients, for a number of months, and some important conversations came out of there, like cloud computing and cloud first, you know, like many advances around shared services. But it became very, very clear that the conversation and the actions needed to be much, much deeper than cost and framed in a very different way, which is where the book Governing to Win came from and really began to change the conversation from a cost-only conversation to a conversation that was really based in national competitiveness.
Government organizations and their people are really driven by the value of the mission they support. What government leaders and firms that serve government clients really focus on are mission effectiveness and value. In Governing to Win, we introduce the concept that for government, mission effectiveness can be equated with value. This allows us to begin to measure value in such a way that it will start to inform and shape the activities within federal agencies. In Governing to Win, value is illustrated as a simple equation. Chuck Pro elaborates.
When we began to talk about competitiveness, the focus really needed to move to the mission and mission effectiveness. In the commercial sector, we measure ourselves a lot of different ways, but ultimately the measures that are important are return on investment and EBITDA, how much cash you're generating and how quickly you turn that cash. Inside our government clients, mission effectiveness is the most important aspect of an agency that must be focused on. And mission effectiveness can typically be measured in terms of a value equation, as you've indicated, that focuses on quality and service and cost and time. And of those dimensions, it became very, very clear, you know, very early on in our conversations and working with our clients that the focus on time inside a government missions was, you know, a very, very important, if not the most important aspect of the value equation.
Quality could describe more accurate refunds or payments, getting the right commodity to the right place at the right time. While service could mean organizations that can regard you as an individual across transactions over time. Cost could mean a cost per transaction for government. Time could also mean a decrease in the wait time for processing of claims and grants. Chuck Pro explains.
The value of time is not necessarily just always dollars and cents. The aspect of serving clients, serving constituencies, with many, many fewer bottlenecks in much shorter periods of time in terms of taking wait times out of supply chains would be another example, in terms of taking bottlenecks out of intelligence processes, in terms of taking wait times in terms of how goods and services are flowed from commercial sector into our government clients. That aspect of time and how you measure time, you know, ultimately will drive down the cost and improve the service of most government missions.
For example, New York City has developed a new health and human services website. With more than 8 million residents, New York City has an extremely large job. It's a difficult job to provide health and human services benefits. Along with the difficulties of serving an immensely diverse population, the city has struggled with internal roadblocks inherent in government. With Access New York, a new HHS web portal, New York City residents can easily check their eligibility for 35 city, state, and federal human services benefits.
This is a great example. That is an example of the city of New York implementing a one-stop portal for social services transactions. And what that did, that took wait times from citizens out of the process. It speeded up the benefit delivery mechanisms of the state to the citizens and ultimately created a much, much lower cost, much, much more agile social services function within the state.
How can FAST government generate value and drive mission effectiveness? We will explore this question and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns. What is FAST government and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How are changing work habits and technology decreasing the federal government's real estate footprint? And how are VA and HUD working to end chronic homelessness among veterans? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We go beyond the buzz to introduce and connect our readers to actual public sector executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. My guest today is Chuck Pro, editor of the IBM Center report, FAST Government, Accelerating Service Quality by Reducing Cost and Time. The FAST Government report examines the role of time in the mission value equation and will focus on process innovation, disruptive technologies, predictive analytics, and other ways leaders can make government processes work faster. Public sector agencies can begin to fundamentally transform their processes through a focus on cycle time reduction and the elimination of non-value-added activities. So what do we mean by FAST? Making time a key performance metric in government efficiency and effectiveness, using technology and leveraging innovation to automate repetitive tasks, accelerating the delivery of government goods and services through process innovation, finding new ways to perform a given set of tasks more quickly, creating interactive services for citizens, and using predictive analytics to reduce or eliminate entire processes. Chuck Pro explains.
At its heart, FAST government is a government that is more agile, that is more responsive and is more efficient. That agility and efficiency can come through application of new technologies. It can come through predictive analytics. It can come through different and more efficient uses of existing methods and tools within the federal government. The other point I'd like to make is that this book is full of examples of where the current government, both federal government, state governments, and local governments are applying very, very innovative capabilities through the application of, again, technology, process, and people. Probably the best would be to provide some anecdote to, what if a government agency could reduce the claim processing time from over 300 days to 60 days? What would that be worth to the agency, and what would that be worth to a citizen? Secondly, if a police force could provide officers with real-time information on crime incidents and suspects, what would that be worth? And most and more importantly, what if we could become more predictive in those processes? And finally, if an organization could save 30% annually by moving to a smarter, faster supply chain, what would that be worth? What would that mean to citizens? So it's not like, government hasn't found ways to become faster, to become smarter. But the systemic application of these capabilities that is in a way that, again, is focused on a more agile, more responsive government is ultimately at the heart of fast government.
Unfortunately, there is no silver bullet to unlocking the value of time. The tools at our disposal to reduce cycle times will be familiar to any student of government transformation over the last few decades. At the heart of any effort to make government work faster will be a focus on three variables: people, process, and technology. What is different is that government leaders can now make the decision to explicitly focus on time as one of the key outcomes for improvement and transformational initiatives. Making the element of time part of the success criteria sends a clear signal to agencies and departments. Chuck Pro continues.
Because ultimately, government services is about outcomes. Our missions in government are focused on outcomes, and providing those outcomes in a smarter, more agile way ultimately improves the services to our citizens. The side benefit of a faster government is typically lower costs and higher service levels. So again, agility being the key. In fact, there is an interesting announcement by the current administration focused on the agenda for government efficiency. It was announced on the 8th of July, and the focus of that is really a smarter, quicker, and more responsive government. So again, current governments, focus on speed, focus on agility, focus on taking bottlenecks out of citizen-centric services is ultimately the focus of fast government.
Government is comprised of thousands and thousands of white-collar and logistical bottlenecks that oftentimes trap good people in bad systems. So reducing time almost invariably results in higher service levels and lower cost points. Once again, Chuck Pro.
Logistics bottlenecks can come in the form of inventories. In today's business world, most logistical movements are done on a just-in-time basis. So we are no longer forecasting what we need and when we need it. We have the technology, we have the processes, we have the capabilities to really move those goods and services to where they need based upon demand. That same logic can be applied to grants management processes as well. There is no reason we need to have bottlenecks in the federal government that are 300, 400, 500 days sometimes to actually provide a service, when in fact a focus on the business rules underlying the process, the proper application of technology and newer technologies to begin to operate those processes in a much more effective manner can take those cycle times down from hundreds of days to handfuls of days. Through the use of predictive analytics, you can actually begin to eliminate processes, to eliminate checks, to eliminate bottlenecks by, the proper application of predictive analytics in ways that takes entire cycles out of either white-collar bottlenecks and or logistical bottlenecks.
Leaders should pay attention to the people aspect of initiatives to improve operations and reduce cycle times. People make government processes run. The most amazing technology in the world will not reduce cycle times and improve performance if the people who manage and support the processes embedded in the technology do not know how to use the new systems or do not support their adoption. Stories are legion about employees who create manual workarounds rather than adopt new technologies, and about improvement initiatives that fail to deliver the predicted results because of employee resistance. So one of the key elements in implementing fast government approaches is ensuring employees are provided the skills and capacities to succeed. But this is not enough. We must also be invested in understanding the bigger picture. Government leaders must not only take an enterprise view for themselves so that they can see the processes from end to end from the perspective of time and value, but also share this with their employees so that they can understand how their team contributes and connects to the efforts of others. Chuck Proe underscores this point.
After Governing to Win was published, I had the good fortune to speak to probably thousands of clients at all levels of government. And what became very, very clear to me is that there is enormous capability that lies with the federal worker, that lies with state workers, and the proper application of technology really unlocks the ability for these workers to do what they know how to do, which is to serve citizens in very effective and very agile ways. So what I'd like to really emphasize that, again, the human capital aspect of improving processes, improving efficiency is paramount. And we have a lot of really, really tremendous workers at all levels of government today that are just really looking for that opportunity to apply what they know to solve really critical mission problems.
When used appropriately, technology can streamline operations and allow employees to shift from a focus on transactional processes to strategic insight and customer service. Increasingly, analytics are being used in government agencies to predict and prevent problems that can lead to costly wastes of time, as well as identify improper payments in advance of making the payment and stopping them. Chuck Proe explains.
We have spent years and decades, quite frankly, implementing systems that allow us to transact government in more efficient and effective ways. We are now to the point in our evolution where we're really moving from those systems of record to systems of engagement. Systems engagement through utilizing social media, through utilizing mobile, through utilizing various cloud-type delivery models really allows us to work, again, outside of the transactional systems and really engage with citizens in a very, very different way. And again, tying this to people, it really does allow our workers and our citizens, quite frankly, to be much more creative, leveraging data in a much very in a very different way than in the past, and ultimately creating a faster, more responsive government.
This is a challenging time to be a public sector leader. Budgets are under enormous pressure, but the mission demands have only gotten bigger, not smaller. So leaders are looking for new ways that their agencies can work better, faster, and at a lower cost. Focusing on making government work faster, whether by redesigning processes, adopting new technologies, or moving to embrace innovation and risk-taking, public sector leaders can improve services and reduce cost. Creating a fast government is hard work, but it can be done. The contributors to this report, from private sector pioneers to career public servants, provide real-world examples of how a focus on speed can transform government.
Most leaders in government today understand this. You know, most leaders in government today have both private sector and public sector experience in implementing, executing processes through the application of technology. I will say that leaders today, in terms of, you know, moving aggressively to new types of delivery models that allow us to execute government much more quickly and more agile, I mean, that is the real point of departure. You know, those leaders today that are utilizing the technologies to truly execute government in a very, very different way are seeing the results of that type of engagement.
As Yogi Berra said, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So the first step of any leader in creating a fast government is to set time and speed as their leadership priority. Then you can figure out what road to take to achieve faster government. In fact, I would argue that it is the leadership imperative, an obligation, to focus on the people side of any improvement initiative. Leaders must convey to people why change is needed, show them the vision, and demonstrate their commitment to seeing the change through. Chuck Proh elaborates.
Yeah, we've talked a bit about many of the obstacles in today's current government. They're typically around process bottlenecks, they're around outdated policies, and quite frankly, they're around systems that don't allow the current government worker to be as responsive and flexible as required. Again, as I mentioned earlier in our discussion, federal state governments are filled with great examples of how governments today are applying technology, tools, processes to make government much more agile, much more responsive, much faster. What this report does through a series of its authors, and again, I'd like to use this time to thank all the contributing authors of the piece, to focus on individual strategies by which we could apply new capabilities, new tools to create a faster government.
The Fast Government Report includes 11 essays by experts in the field. The report is divided into two parts. One part presents strategies to lay a foundation for fast government. Chuck Proh, editor of the report, continues.
Examples are Irving Wolowski-Berger focus on the structural issues of government and how those structural issues can, in fact, be adjusted to create a more agile government. Second, Nitin Pradhan, CEO and president of LaunchDream LLC, looks at the importance of the federal government's role in investing in transformative technologies that will speed services. Morgan Kinghorn, the president and CEO of Wellington Advisory Services, also a former CFO in the federal government, provides advice on how to succeed in government using four key steps in institutionalizing accountability for speed in government. Mark Forman, co-founder of the Government Transaction Services and former CIO in the federal government, provides an interesting and helpful model for assessing the impact of 21st century information tools to streamlining operational effectiveness of our agencies.
The final two chapters of Part 1 of the Fast Government Report present additional strategies that discuss overcoming historical obstacles to implementing fast government. Frank Reeder consults, writes, and teaches on information policy issues. He looks at the need to tackle security and privacy in order for fast government to become a reality. Robert Shea discusses barriers to innovation, speed, and performance, and presents six conditions that need to be in place in order to actualize them. Part 2 of the Fast Government Report outlines five key tools that can be used to realize fast government, including gaming technology, mobile technologies, supply chains, and a no-wrong-door approach to speeding government. Once again, here's Chuck Proh.
Tools and capabilities that are being applied today in the federal government, such as mobile, social, cloud, gaming, predictive analytics. These are tools and capabilities that really begin to tie the whole concept of people and technology together in innovative solutions. Again, it's really the notion of moving to systems of engagement versus systems of record. Nicole Lazzaro, world-renowned gaming researcher, discussed use of gaming as a new approach to delivering public services that, in fact, in a fast, efficient manner. Given the rise in the use of gaming in the new generation of citizens, we have many, many of our younger generation who are entering this type of capability with an enormous amount of background and experience. Tom Suter, the president and founder of MobileGov, explores the challenge of governments in utilizing mobile technology. You can, again, just imagine, you know, taking mobile technology into places like the Forest Service in terms of fire prevention and many, many other, you know, critical government agencies that are, in fact, dispersed in the far reaches of the country. Bob Luby, the managing director of True North Equities, and Lieutenant General Tom Glisson, retired of True North Logistics, examined the modern supply chains and how modern supply chains can affect, as we talked about earlier today, be really leveraged and focused on demand eliminating many of the stores and bottlenecks that exist in traditional supply chains.
The tools and technologies available to today's public sector leaders have the potential to dramatically accelerate how work is done in government. Examples of these new tools include mobile technology, social cloud, the use of gaming technology, and the use of advanced analytics that can be used to change how leaders think about and use the data they already have in hand. These tools demonstrate the power of disruptive innovation to make radically enduring change.
You said a critical word, enduring changes. Yeah. You know, we in government too many times have to envision programs that are very, very long and very systemic. What these newer capabilities are allowing us to do is do what we'll call fail fast. And so what these technologies and capabilities with the right leadership, and again, the recent announcement of the current administration on the government efficiency initiative really lends itself to trying capabilities quickly, prototyping them, proof of concepting them, and when in fact you have something that works to make a more agile, make a faster government, then adopting them. When we do that, we have to remember that we always have to begin to sunset the older, slower ways of engaging with citizens and solving problems.
Chuck Proh, editor of the IBM Center special report, Fast Government, offers advice to government executives on how to make these changes and fast government stick.
In dealing with many, many very innovative government leaders over the years, what has always struck me is the simplicity and consistency of a leadership message to drive change. What we have in our federal, state, and local workforces are many, many people who have the kind of the innovation, the knowledge to really make changes that stick. And when you combine that with, again, focused leadership providing simplistic, focused messages to improve the performance of government, you know, that's when things change. They change quickly and they change for the longer term. My focus is always on identifying those areas within government that are utilizing the tools, the methods, with the right type of innovative people to solve really, really complex mission problems in a much quicker way. And those examples are out there. So just to continue to evangelize the need to stay focused on time, because time will always lead to a more responsive government, a government that is more responsive to its citizens.
What conditions give innovation, speed, and performance a fighting chance in government? We will explore this question and so much more when the special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns. What is fast government, and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How can serendipitous collision change the way agencies do business? How are changing work habits and technology decreasing the federal government's footprint? Get your latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We go beyond the buzz to introduce and connect our readers to actual public sector executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Get your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. In our previous segment, we explored the concept of fast government, a concept introduced in a 2012 IBM Center book, Governing to Win. Innovation, speed, and performance are critical to realizing the promise of fast government. What are the barriers to innovation, speed, and performance? And what conditions give them a fighting chance in government? And how do we balance risk-taking with being a good steward of the public trust? In this half, we explore these questions and so much more with Robert Shea, contributor to the IBM Center report, Fast Government. Robert, welcome back to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Michael.
So, Robert, you reference examples that illustrate that fostering innovation, speed, and performance in government is not an impossible task. Would you elaborate on those examples, such as the government security clearance process or producing an audited financial statement within 45 days? What are the obstacles to achieving those targets, and how do you overcome them?
So I think the greatest obstacle is a perception that they are so difficult to overcome that it's not worth trying. In the security clearance zones, there's a lot of attention focused on the fact that people weren't getting on the job, contractors weren't being hired because they couldn't get a security clearance. Congress passed a law setting a completely ridiculous goal of getting a security clearance done in 40 days. And they set some interim targets and said, we're going to bring you up here, haul you up here, someone might say, to see how you're doing and what we can do to help. And OMB took a leadership role in convening the relevant parties, set some targets, met regularly, identified things that we need to do differently to get to that goal. And it was unbelievable to people that we actually met that target by the date in the law, because people were focused on it regularly. They knew that they were going to be held accountable for this goal, and they brought whatever resources were necessary to do it. The same is true of audited financial statements. I had just worked on a law that moved the date for the financial statements from the end of March to the end of April. We shortened it by 30 days. Of course, the fiscal year ends at the end of September. When the management agenda was set and the milestones for each of the different initiatives, one of the financial management initiatives targets was to reduce the date for producing audited financial statements from 90 days to 45 days. And I remember hearing it, and I'm thinking, I just shortened it by 30 days, and people said I was out of my mind. Here they set a target of 45 days. The community thought it was virtually impossible. The theory was, if you're taking so long to produce audited financial statements, you don't have systems in place that produce financial information that can be used on a regular basis to make decisions. So if you set such an aggressive target, you're going to have to systematize your financial management. Well, however they got there, they got there. Most agencies today, except for perhaps the Department of Defense, are producing audited financial statements 45 days after the end of the fiscal year. It's not a magic date, but it emphasizes the importance of setting a clear goal, focusing on it, paying regular attention to it.
So what prompted your interest in this area, and why did you contribute to the report?
Well, IBM approached me and asked me, told me they were writing on the subject of speed, how to get things done faster. And I began to reflect on some of my experiences, and I thought I had something to contribute, especially in these two examples and many others where the thought that you can achieve these aggressive things is so out of the realm of possibility for many, and how that has proven time and time again to be inaccurate.
So your piece identifies three barriers to innovation, speed, and performance within government. I'd like to explore each of these, but first, the first one you discuss is the aversion to risk, and you claim it's the biggest barrier to innovation in government. Why is that the case?
Well, I think, you know, Michael, that there's an enormous oversight infrastructure. You've got OMB looking over your shoulder. You've got inspectors general looking over your shoulder. You've got the Government Accountability Office looking over your shoulder. And Congress, all of whom are ready to help you do your job, to tell you how you could do it better, what you're doing wrong. And there's a wide variance in the way this oversight is conducted, but some of it can land you on the front page of the Washington Post. The current IRS example is probably the most prominent one right now. But you can be subjected to all kinds of abuse and ridicule for making a mistake in government that makes you really want to dot your I's and cross your T's, such that it's really stifling a lot of what could be real innovation and risk-taking.
Well, given your experience, both within government with the previous administration and now in the private sector, and your expertise, how do you infuse government culture with a healthy dose of risk-taking? How can you do that?
Right. I think the key ingredient is leadership. You need to know, if you're a federal employee, that your leadership is going to stand by you when you make a mistake. Because if you take risks, not careless ones, I'm not talking about doing stupid stuff. You need to be thoughtful about it. But you need to do things that are different in the hopes that they will have a big payoff in terms of results, outcomes. But you need to, leadership needs to say, that's okay. And if you make a mistake, I'm going to defend you. I'm going to stand up for you.
So let's move on to the second barrier you identify. Another shortcoming among government agencies is in clarity of purpose. Why does the federal government have such a difficulty in setting clear goals?
Well, because what we do is hard. It's hard for a number of reasons. Number one, it's easy to count what we're doing every day, how many regulations we're issuing, how many checks we're cutting. Just the activity, it's really easy to measure that. It's harder to measure the impact of those things. How much better are kids learning? Is crime being reduced? Are we safer as a nation? Are we curing cancer? Those things are hard to measure, and it's hard for us to connect our activities to those ultimate outcomes. But ultimately, if we're not doing that, then I don't think we're really doing a great job of measuring the impact of our investment as a government.
So what's the third barrier you identified to innovation, speed, and performance within the federal government?
Well, the declining resources. This town is all about the budget. And unfortunately, the budgets are going down across the board. And with fewer resources, people need to be a little bit better about how they're investing. Hopefully, it's producing some greater attention to reducing waste so that we can focus resources that are having on things that are having a better impact. But it's definitely a barrier. Innovation can be real expensive. You know, if you're talking about curing cancer, we need a lot more money so a lot more people can be focused on that issue. With fewer resources, we just need to be a lot more creative about how we're going to get there.
So, Robert, what do you say to the folks who assert that the budget constraints may, in fact, breed innovation?
Yeah. Well, I think that's true to a degree. It can foster innovation. But there are folks who say we ought to just stop doing stuff. We were just talking about my friend Owen Barwell, former deputy CFO at Energy and NASA. And he and I have this argument. He says we should stop talking about getting more with less. That's impractical. But I say whatever declining resources there are, we still have a lot of money to spend. And there's a lot of waste in government. Estimates are that we're spending vast amounts wastefully. Improper payments are estimated to be above $100 billion a year. That is money we could spend better, innovating, doing things better, faster, cheaper.
What conditions give innovation, speed, and performance a fighting chance in government? We will explore this question and so much more when this special edition of the Business of Government Hour returns. What is fast government, and how can focusing on time and speed deliver real and lasting benefits? How are VA and HUD working to end chronic homelessness among veterans? What is national health security, and how do we get there as a country? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. We bring you insights and interviews from government executives who are changing the way government does business. All of this and more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Download or order your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. My guest today is Robert Shea, contributor to the IBM Center book, Fast Government, Accelerating Service Quality by Reducing Cost and Time. So, Robert, the barriers to success requires a concerted effort to overcome them. In fact, you identify six conditions that give innovation, speed, and performance a fighting chance in government. I'd like to explore each of these conditions. Would you tell us more about the first condition you identify around clear goal setting?
Yep. It's difficult for agencies to identify the outcomes they're trying to achieve. In government, it's easy to keep producing what it is you're supposed to be doing, and we could even do that faster and perhaps cheaper. But if you don't know what goal it is you're trying to achieve, all of that activity could be for naught. So we need to remind ourselves what it is we're ultimately trying to achieve. In the case of security clearances, for instance, we want a faster security clearance process, but we also want an effective one. And if people don't think the security clearance process adequately protects us from people who would do wrong, then it doesn't matter how fast it is or slow. So you need to keep those mutual goals, sometimes competing goals, in mind as you go about doing that process. But it's also true of programs in the other area. I remember one program we assessed at the Department of Education aimed at improving student achievement, and it was focused on an after-school program. Multiple evaluations found that even though kids in that program were improving, they weren't doing nearly as well as kids outside the program. So, you know, even though the data they had showed some progress, the program actually was putting those kids at a disadvantage. So you really need to ask yourself, how well am I achieving my goals, not only in isolation, but compared with other activities?
And you underscore that this is not about activities or outputs, but about outcomes.
Right.
What do you mean by outcomes, and what are some of the benefits of assessing progress toward those outcomes?
So an outcome is the thing you're trying to achieve, the ultimate impact that we want to have, the things we do, the things we're trying to accomplish are pretty unbelievable, and we need to make sure we're really clear about those outcomes. We want a secure nation. We want to improve education achievement. We want to cure cancer, AIDS. We want to achieve any kind of ambitious goals in the programs we accomplish. That is distinguished from inputs, which are basically the money you spend, the activities you're performing, and outputs. So if we invest in a program that puts a kid in an after-school program, neither of those are the ultimate outcome. The ultimate outcome is that kid achieving, doing better in school?
Well, your second condition is to be completely transparent about what you are doing or aren't doing. Would you elaborate on the importance of this condition? And what are the benefits of openness, and how does it get people to move towards the right action?
Well, transparency is a condition that I've come to later in my career. If you're in government, you are almost in a cocoon, especially when you're in the executive branch or even in the White House. You are conditioned to keep what you're doing secret until it can be revealed publicly. So more often than not, major initiatives or accomplishments are released as a surprise to people who care about them, namely the Congress, but other stakeholders as well. So they may or may not like what you're announcing, the budget you're proposing, the initiative you're launching. You'd be better served if they were brought into that process much earlier. And my best example is USA Spending. Congress enacted the Federal Funding Accountability and Transparency Act, and I was given responsibility for implementing that. I had a year to launch a website that tracked every financial transaction of the government and no real budget to do it with. So we had Congress and other stakeholders at the table, and GAO was among them, as we met, decided how we were going to do it, trade-offs we made. So when we launched it, imperfect as it was, they celebrated that. They knew the decisions we made, why we made them, and why this imperfect solution had to be launched when it did. The law requires that sub-grantees' transactions be reported, but it was impractical for us to do it by the required date. Mm-hmm. And if we had just launched the site without having brought our stakeholders along. They would have been angry. They would have held us to account for that. As it was, they knew the barriers to getting to where we were going, and when we launched, were delighted at the progress we made. And I think the major factor that contributed to that shared accomplishment was the fact that we had those folks at the table. We were completely transparent about what we were doing.
It's earlier than that, too, with PART. When you folks published all the PART results, it was transparent.
Yeah, it was. We produced initially all the detailed answers and evidence on which those answers were based on the Internet, but it was in a spreadsheet form. We engaged some focus groups that helped us tailor a website to the public's appetite, really. So there was summary information that linked to detailed information. We really evolved, and I think the government is evolving. You know, there's so much more information available today than ever before, and the challenge is how to really filter it and make it useful. The usefulness of things about which we're transparent is evolving.
Well, the next condition you outline is around leadership, and you referenced it earlier. How important is it to have a good leader in place for an organization to be successful at fostering innovation, speed, and performance?
It's essential. And you'll never always have a complement of leaders that meet these requirements. You know, someone who cares about the way an organization is operating, who cares about its people and what they think of the leadership and the mission of the organization, and are willing to take risks and invest what they need to improve. It's a leader who is humble, who will accept criticism, use that information to help modify their direction. I just can't underscore how important leadership is to the success of an organization, to the extent to which it will accomplish its goals, do things faster, better, cheaper.
So one of the frequent complaints that government gets is that it's not accountable, it lacks accountability. Your fourth condition describes the need to hold leaders and their teams accountable. Why is accountability such a foundational condition to foster innovation, speed, and performance?
Well, there's so many examples where a federal program continues to fall short of its goals, but no improvement is made. There's no change in direction. There are some anomalies, of course, but there are many examples where people feel that the government's not being responsive. And, you know, we need to be fair. I think we got a long way to go to restoring the compact we have with our political and career leadership and the federal employees they oversee and manage. But if we get that right, I think we can have a process by which people are held accountable fairly for their performance, and they respond to it. You know, we've got a situation today where, our pay system right now pays people the same amount of money each year, irrespective of their performance. And I've tried very hard in my career to implement some reforms that made the pay system more performance sensitive. We are a long way towards having a government where that happens. But frankly, we've got a long way to go towards convincing our employees that they can trust a system to do that.
So your fifth condition is around something we talked about briefly earlier, and that's celebrating risk-taking. Isn't the institutional culture of an entity as significant as the government, the federal government, in its size and mission, inherently adverse to risk-taking? And what can be done to transform that institutional culture?
It is. It is inherently averse to risk. And without a strong leader backing you up, it's going to be difficult to move an organization to become a bigger risk-taker.
Yeah, and is it risk-taking on an incremental basis, or is it more like the moonshot? I mean, how do you cultivate this and accept and instill an appetite for risk-taking within the federal government?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. We want to shoot for the moon. We don't want to be irresponsible. Mm-hmm. We are stewards of taxpayer dollars. That means that people who go to work every day have to give a portion of what they earn, not willfully, mind you, not voluntarily. They are required to give this to the federal government. So that's a sacred trust that we have over those monies. But we want to figure out where we can make an investment that has a chance for a huge return on investment. One of the things I'm most excited in the government today is pay for success mm-hmm. programs. The concept here is that you can put out a pot of money that will be provided to an entity only if it achieves the results we're trying to achieve. So let's say we're trying to improve education in a community. The Pay for Success program, the way it would work, is a group of investors, social reformers, educators would come together, implement a program, have it evaluated, and only if that evaluation showed positive results would they get any money from the federal government. There's not a lot of evidence that this works. Mm-hmm. But the Obama administration is testing it in a number of areas. And should it work, this could dramatically transform the way we manage grants, for instance. Only pay money for a program that produces quantifiable results. Today, the opposite is almost true. Mm-hmm. We pay money, and only in the rare circumstance can we show quantifiable results from our investments. That's the kind of risk that is shooting for the moon. If that proves to work, we could really greatly improve the return on investment we get from those sacred tax dollars.
Is this similar to the social impact bond?
It's precisely social impact bonds. In America, we have to call it something different.
So your sixth condition is around collaboration. Why is it so important? We hear this term always and everywhere, and it's often, you know, echoed, and it could be means everything to everybody. What exactly? Why is it so important? What does it mean, and how does it relate to a concept of shared leadership?
There's no activity in the federal government. There's no result we're trying to achieve that doesn't involve a number of players. So, at the most basic, you're talking about federal, state, local players trying to secure the border, improve crime in the city, help people get employment, improve education attainment. All of those activities, core functions of the federal government, are being performed at every level of government. But at the federal level, they are also being performed by multiple agencies and programs. So we've got, in most areas, dozens or so funding streams trying to get at the same goal. At the most basic level, to accomplish those objectives, you need collaboration at the federal, state, and local level. But if you could combine these funding streams, share lessons learned, and move investment to those activities proven to be more effective, then you would get a greater return on your dollar. People would see the return more immediately on their investment because they're at the table. They're in the conversation. You know, another initiative of the Obama administration is the Collaborative Forum. Yeah. This is a group that is aimed at identifying administrative barriers among multiple programs that, if removed, could make it easier for state, local governments, nonprofits to get access to dollars and invest them –